Believe it or not, many years ago, I attended seminary. I really felt the Lord's call in my life, and I felt like that I needed to do something. So I prayed and prayed, and months went by, and I had no clear answer from the Lord as to what way to go. So I finally became determined that I was going to do something. I was going to head in a direction and pray that as I'm in the way, Lord would show me the way. Well, while I was attending seminary, there was a professor there in one of the classes, and he was sharing some information with the class, and he says, "Would you believe that in the churches of people who are believers that tithe on a regular basis, that are involved in different committees and whatever, the heart, the core of the church, would you believe that 90% of that group has never completely read their Bible all the way through? 90%. And he says, "Believe me, I'm being conservative." He says, "If I was really being honest with you, I would say 97%. I was like, "Wow. Wow." So he says, "So I'm going to offer you some good advice, wisdom." Now, I want to put a little pause here besides the word wisdom, because a lot of times when somebody offers you wisdom, we very seldom catch it the first time around. It takes a while for wisdom to come. And I've learned that many times the hard way myself. So anyway, So this professor went on. He says, "This is what you really need to do." He says, "Number one thing that everyone should do that calls themselves a believer is simply read the Word. Just read it." But then we say, "Oh, but wow." We get into the begets and the begots, and then there's those names that are this long, and I can't do it. I can't pronounce these names. Don't worry about it. I'll give you permission to skip the begets and the begots. Don't worry about it the first time through. Just make it a promise to make it through. And when you get to those names that are so long that we can't pronounce, give it your best shot. Don't let it bog you down. Continue through. Remembering you're reading scriptures through. Now, your second time around, or I should say, at the end of your first time of reading, somewhere toward the end of the scriptures, you'll begin to realize there are certain themes that keep reoccurring. Certain catchwords keep popping up. And so this is like a curiosity type thing. Make note of it. Make a mental note of it. But keep moving on. Second time that you go through, this time when you go through, you bring along a pen, a highlighter or something. And when you get to those interesting scriptures, the scriptures where you say there's something different, there's something unusual about these scriptures, underline them, highlight them, do whatever it takes. Sometimes in this process, you may even want to take a moment or two to look some words up to get a deeper understanding, to increase your knowledge. Now, the third time through is the one that really gets you. This is research time. This is when you read through the Bible the third time, and every place that you get to that you've underlined or highlighted, you take your time. Here, the determination is, I will understand this scripture. I will understand this word this phrase, I will understand it before I give myself permission to go on to the next thing. And even though you may make it completely through the Bible within your lifetime, the third time, you would indeed have read the Bible many times using this research method. So, what I would like to do today is to present to you a scenario, an abbreviated scenario of what I was just talking about, and that I have 3 points. I've heard that somewhere before. First of all, read the word. Second point, research the word. Third point, revelation of the word. So, as I will have our people in the back, if you would put up the scriptures for me from the book of Shemot, Exodus chapter 30, verses 34 through 38. You got the other one, 34 through 38? Slowly, we're getting almost. But we'll read on. This has to do with the Lord's incense. Starting in verse 34, it starts like this. Then the Lord said unto Moses, take fragrant spices, gum, resin, oica, and gabbanum, and pure frankincense, all in equal amounts. Verse 35. And make a fragrant blend of incense, the work of a perfumer. It is to be salted. It will be pure and sacred. Grind some of it into a powder and place it in front of the Ark of the Covenant of the Law in the tent of meeting, where I will meet with you. It will be most holy to you. Do not make any incense from this formula for yourself. Consider it holy to the Lord. Whoever makes incense like this to enjoy its fragrance must be cut off from the people. Okay. What we just did, we just demonstrated the first part, reading of the scriptures, as we would peruse through. When we would read this for the first time, perhaps we would make a special note in our memory that there are some things that are sacred unto the Lord. And then we would just continue on. Now, who would have thought that these spices would necessarily have any deeper meaning at all? Who would have ever thought about it? But I've learned over the years that everything is important to the Lord. When the Lord commands us to do something, there's something deeper about it. You can take it at the surface level. The Lord just said, gather some gum, some resin, mix it all together. You can take it at that face value. But if you want a deeper meaning, then you have to search deeper. So, let's move on to point two. And just verse 34 up here this time. So the word research that we're getting into, point two, is a process of examination and understanding of the Word of God. It's the next level in the unveiling of a deeper mystery of God. Primarily, it assists us in the understanding of the text and in the words which we are reading. The text I've chosen for today is a prime example of how we can use this method. As we look again at verse 34, the Lord said, take fragrant spices, gum, resin, oica, Abanum, and pure frankincense, all in equal amounts. Before I would begin my research on anything, I would first ask myself a couple questions. Do I really need to know what these ingredients are all about or where they come from? Is it something that I really need to spend my time and energy on? I think these would be reasonable questions. However, if I take a moment and I reason to myself, I must make note that these ingredients were gathered in equal portions, mixed together, presented as a sacred incense before the Lord. It was something very special. Perhaps this would give me the encouragement or the motivation that I would need to go a little bit further. So let's jump in. Let's take a look at it. And the first ingredient here in the NIV, it's listed as gum resin. In the King James, it refers to it as sancti, or in Hebrew, it's nefti, N-A-F-T-E. The two words literally mean the same. They mean drop. They mean drop. And scholars agree, you can put up picture number one now. Scholars agree that the word drop refers to the myrrh tree. The myrrh tree is an Arabian Felix tree. And this tree does something peculiar. It literally sweats resin on its own. It permeates the outside of the tree before you even touch it. So the drops can literally be harvested from the outside. So it literally sweats drops of gum. Okay, give me picture number two. Ah, a question mark. That doesn't look like a tree to me. Our next ingredient is oica. And there's some debate here. And again, when we begin our research mode, we can go into areas that may cause us to pause. This is part of research. Sometimes in research, you have this information, you have that information, you have all kinds of information. Sometimes the information agrees, sometimes it does not agree. But then you must reason together. Now, oica, this first definition that I picked up on, and most commentators agree that oica is a form of the word onyx. The word onyx, like in the onyx stone, is an odoriferous shell. It is a shell like that of a shellfish called purpurea. The onyx is fished out of its watery places in the Indies, where it lives among the spikenard. Spikenard. Spikenard's a plant. This fishy shellfish literally eats the spikenard, which in turn causes its shell to be perfumey. Interesting. But then we have a problem. That's not a shellfish. He jumped ahead of me. The question mark should have still been up there. Okay, there we go. Y'all are good. So the debate comes after I read this, and like I said, most commentators agree that the shellfish is literally the answer here. But then a group of rabbis get together, and what do you get? You get the bait. Nobody knows anything anymore. So then they say, what? Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. They say, time out. Time out. It's a shellfish. They say it's not kosher. Right? It's not kosher. So then they go about and they say, well, what is kosher? Well, now we can go to number three. There we go. This is called labdanum. It's from the rock rose bush. And that is hard to say. Rock rose bush. And the rabbis get together and they kind of agree that this is it. And they offer up 100 different explanations why, but I will offer you a few. They say, labdanum, it's a sweet spice. Labdanum is kosher from the Talmud. The Talmud says that labdanum is not a tree. That labdanum is a bush. It's widely around the Jordanian area. So that would be good. It says that labdanum has what the leaves or the flowering part of it there is shaped like a fingernail. And so they kind of go that way with it. It kind of looks like a fingernail, and the reference to all of this is that part of it should look like a fingernail. It says the leaves of the rock rose plants are shaped like fingernails and that they have scarlet and black fingernail-like markings on them, because we're looking for like a reference to claw. Labdanum is also recorded in the book of Genesis as being a balm, like a salve, if you will, treasured by the Hebrew people and Egyptians alike. So, we have a shellfish, which I could not find a good picture of. That's why we don't have a shellfish up here. Okay. But the labdanum bush is here. We have it. So the rabbis say it could be a bush. They don't think that it should be a shellfish. But when I submitted this to Rabbi David, Rabbi David said, wait a minute, you're overlooking something that's a trap. I said, ah, here we go, another rabbi. And so he says, think about this for a minute. When they were building the tent of meeting, and they used all these different skins to cover the tent of meeting, a lot of those skins were not kosher. Matter of fact, some of them were dolphin skin and other such things. They weren't kosher. And then he went as far as to say, also on the tzitzit, you have a blue thread that goes through this. You know where that blue comes from? Snails. I actually saw this on the Discovery Channel, where they had this concoction that was made from snails, and they took the material that the tzitzits are made out of, and they had lots of them, and they would dip it in what looked like a clear substance. And Orthodox rabbis in there, he's dunking it down in the barrel, and he's bringing it up, and he's working this material through, and he dips it a second time, and he works it through the material, and when he dips it the third time and brings it up, the material is blue. And I was like, wow, that was awesome. So, does not have to be kosher for the simple fact, why? We're not eating it. Kosher applies when you're eating it. But now we have two ingredients. Back to the question mark. So which one do we pick? But I have another solution. In the Talmud, it states that 11 different ingredients were used. Not just the four or five that we are putting together here, but there were 11. But they were of the same species of plants or whatever. So, in your research, sometimes you need to decide. So I go back to the shellfish. It's easier. But let me tell you about the shellfish. The orca shellfish grows in the Reed Sea. And it's said to be huge. And I guess this is why I couldn't get a picture of it. It was too big. I don't know. But they didn't have a picture. They're saying that the shell is huge. It's kind of white in color. If it comes out of the Reed Sea, the purest form of the shell comes from the Reed Sea. And they're also found in the Babylonian reeds as well. But their shell is brown. So there's two different forms. So, picture number four. Let's move on. That's just an example of sometimes when you begin your research, you're going to have things that will not agree. This is where you have to use a little bit of reasoning and so forth as well. Gabanum is the next ingredient. This is an aromatic gum resin. It's a Persian plant species. This plant grows plentiful on the slopes and in the ranges in northern Iran. The gum resin can be hard or it can be soft, irregular, translucent, or in lumps. Its color can range anywhere from light brown, yellowish, green in color. But here we go. Here's the kicker for this one. It has a disagreeable smell. Has a musky smell. And some will say that the smell from the gum of this plant is most like death. Smells like death. Now go figure. I'm not going to spend much time on death, so let's go to picture number five. This is the frankincense tree. It's fairly rare. It's found in dry city, desert city. It's found in dry cities in the southwest of Virginia. No. It's fairly rare, normally found in dry desert riverbeds in Arabia. It's very aromatic. It's highly prized and sought after and expensive. One of the unique facts concerning frankincense is this. Now, I want you to listen to this closely because this is fascinating. You extract the resin from this tree twice a year, in the fall and in the spring. In the fall, the resin is clear, it's white. But in the spring, it's red. And when I think about that, so think about our fall festivals. What's the holiest time of the year for the Jewish community? It's in the fall, Yom Kippur. Everybody knows what happens in the spring. We have our Passover, and it's red. Interesting. So each of these plants, their sap, their resin is taken individually. Individually, they are powdered down, beaten down into a powder, each one alone. Then each one alone is weighed. And then when the weights are equal, they're all mixed together. And then they are presented before the Lord. Picture number six. Oh, yes. mixed together with salt. Salt. Salt is the preserver here. The preserver. Okay, you can just take that down. So, looking at the last part of our study, the revelation of the Word. This is where, after you've done your research, you have the information spread out in front of you to allow the Scriptures to talk to you. What have you just read? Can you put it together? Does this make sense? Let's just take a look at some of the facts that we've already presented. The myrrh tree sweats out its gum freely, yields a very precious liquor. It plainly, freely gives. Orca, if we look at it from the plant point of view, from the rock rose plant, it produces a black onyx gum called ladanum, which is used in some countries as a medicine. The roots of this plant are pierced. Frankincense is a fairly rare, highly sought after, expensive gum. It's very sweet. It's gathered in the autumn and the spring. Most precious in the autumn is because the resin is white and it's red in the spring. To extract the gum or the resin from this tree, the tree must be striped or wounded, literally slashes. Gabanum, it's an aromatic gum. Yielding plants grow plentifully in the slopes of northern Iran. Has the smell of death. So in our time of revelation, what can we see? I heard somebody offer up an explanation that says a full measure is when somebody would take both hands, dip it into a basket or a bucket or whatever it was, and as much as you could possibly hold in your hands was a full measure. And it says that the priest would take a full measure of this incense and they would put it into a golden incense censer or a golden bowl. And then this bowl would be transferred to the incense altar. Let's show the priest and the incense altar. It's the last picture there, picture 7. The censer in his right hand, and of course, the altar of incense, and the golden pan is literally sitting on top there of the altar. So let's take a look at this picture for a second. When we compare the position of that golden altar, where was it positioned? It was the last piece of furniture before you got to the Holy of Holies. It was golden. It was anointed. It was set aside. It was special. This is the only offering inside of the Holy of Holies that's burning. Of course, you have your lamps that are burning, but not a smoky offering. If we were to step back and look at what's offered today, we would see that, number one, we know that Yeshua, he gave himself freely. We also know that before his death, Yeshua sweat draped great drops of blood as he was giving himself freely. We know that some of these plants, they offered up healing. And so does Yeshua. He healed the sick. Yeshua was wounded for our transgressions. He was striped along his back. Yeshua was pierced. Yeshua took upon himself even death. And now today, as the altar of incense would be at the right hand of the altar, or we say at the right hand of the throne in heaven, offering up prayer and intercession for us. When you get time, I urge you to look at Revelation chapter 8 and just read it. Gives a picture in heaven of the altar as well. Yeshua, our intercessor, is today our incense, which is pleasing and acceptable before God. Yeshua, he is our incense today before the Father.